Hi, families. Welcome to this episode. Before we get started, I wanted to take a second to tell you about Gab Wireless. They are the creators of the world's safest phones for kids ages 4 and up. Now, I'm speaking as a parent who has had to deal with making the decision of whether or not to get my kids cell phones. So I highly recommend that before you buy your child a cell phone, do yourself a favor and look into Gab's devices. They are the perfect alternative to fully loaded smartphones. And they include everything that your child needs to stay connected to you, minus the distraction and risks like social media and the internet. Plus, I can personally attest to how nice it is to talk to my children on their own devices instead of having to go through my ex. For example, my older daughter, who's around 12, has the Premium Plus phone now. And my youngest, who is 6, has the watch, which she's had for a couple of years, and they call me whenever they need me and send me texts whenever they need me. So it's been really, really awesome for us. Not to mention how super affordable Gab's devices and accessories and calling plans are. So if you're in the market for a phone for your child, go to Gab Wireless, that's GABBWireless.com, and at least comparison shop, right? No harm, no foul. And if you decide to shop and get something, you can get an exclusive discount just for being a listener if you use our promo code. And that code is COPARENT. See? Easy to remember. COPARENT. COPARENT. So feel free to use it. And if you become a proud Gab parent, don't forget to tag us on social media. Hi, this is Rosalie Farnsworth, and you're listening to The Co-Parenting Collective. In this episode, we are going to talk about 10 toxic parenting behaviors and how to avoid them. And I'm going to tell you a little secret here as well. If you do the opposite, the exact opposite of these 10 toxic behaviors, you are going to make your kid narcissist proof. They will literally have so much self-respect and confidence that they won't put up with anybody's bullshit. It's like this, do the opposite of what these behaviors are, and it is, you will raise a child that essentially has the anti-venom to jumping into unhealthy, manipulative relationships in their life, work life, personal life, whatever. So pay close attention. Let's get started. According to Amy Morin, a psychotherapist, licensed clinical social worker, mental strength coach, and international best-selling author, we're going to go over the 10 toxic behaviors of parents that make children less functional in adulthood. We all know that being unreceptive to your child's emotions can stunt their emotional and mental growth, and most people clearly recognize that serious maltreatment, like abuse and neglect, can have a lasting impact on children. But what about toxic parenting strategies that don't arise from an extreme level of abuse? Or what about destructive parenting behaviors that might be less obvious? There's a lot of families who appear to function okay to the outside world, yet they are riddled with dysfunction. Their family dynamics behind closed doors are less than desirable, shall we say. And just because their behaviors don't constitute quote unquote abuse, or because they aren't visible to anyone outside of the family, doesn't mean that they won't prevent kids from becoming unhealthy adults, ill-equipped, emotionally dysfunctional, or dysregulated adults. So let's go over the 10 toxic parenting behaviors that can make children less functional in adulthood. Number 1, shielding your kids from pain. Now, while you don't want to expose your kids to pain just for the purpose of toughening them up, you also don't want to shield them from every single discomfort that comes their way. Now, whether a parent insists that the coach put their kid on the team, or they say their missing cat is on vacation, kids who lack experience dealing with pain often become adults who crumble when they encounter adversity. So it's really important that when your kids are uncomfortable or frustrated, it's important to help them process those emotions and to match their emotion with an appropriate set of tools to handle those environments or those situations. And kids that are shielded from life's adversities all the time also kind of end up being a little entitled, or they can end up being entitled and feeling very precious and golden and victimized by everything. So it's a fine line. We really have to take care to, you know, observe what our child is going through and let them know that that's part of life, that there are going to be circumstances that are uncomfortable. And again, I can't say this enough, shoring up their toolbox with the strategies that they're going to need to handle adversity and be resilient in an ever-changing world. Number two, invalidating their feelings. Telling kids to stop worrying or stop crying, by the way, crying is our first language, isn't it? Sends a message that their feelings are bad. And it teaches them that they need to hide their feelings or fight those emotions. And they may grow up to mask those feelings or numb their pain or disassociate in very unhealthy ways. So if you are constantly steamrolling your kid, right? Like, stop that, quit it, stop crying, knock it off, I don't want to hear it. Just, you know, telling them that or making them feel like what they're feeling is useless, essentially, by saying that, like, just shut up and be quiet. You know, that old saying, like, kids are supposed to be seen and not heard. Ew, gag me. But that invalidates their feelings. And believe me, I know, as a mom who is super intentional with my kids, it can get absolutely exhausting to not only, you know, my daily life, my workload, and responsibilities every day, you know, it can be grueling. And then you take having to manage children. And you really have to be present in order to get this sort of right, to be at their level. And I guess, like, walk them through their emotions and be able to take the time to do that. Now, does it take hours out of your day? No. But, you know, for example, when my little one, who is 5, gets upset, and for all my kids, really, when they're upset, I just take that 2 minutes to get down and look them in the eye and say, what's going on? Or, like, my little one will get upset. And when she's upset and she's crying, there is no talking. It's just a long hug. And I kind of whisper in her ear, I'm here, mommy's here. And then once she's calm, I will ask her what's going on. The first thing that I do is have them do a self-check. Like, are you hungry? Are you tired? Are you feeling sick? Like that. That'll stick with anybody forever, right? From zero to death, we are not doing well if we're hungry, tired, or sick. So that's the first thing I'll do, is a little self-check. And then we'll talk about what their feelings are, and I'll help them process their feelings instead of invalidating feelings. Number three, praising achievements only. So again, another scenario where you might raise a child that thinks they're better than everybody else, or that they should never ever have to have any kind of challenges. But this is, you know, praising their achievements only is essentially when a parent praises the kids for like getting the perfect score on a math test or scoring the most points in the game. And they teach them that their accomplishments matter more than everything else. Kids who only hear praise for their achievements rather than for putting in the hard work that it actually took to be able to achieve the thing in the first place, may grow up to become adults who think that they need to succeed at all costs. And this can lead to, you know, them being more willing to lie and cheat and steal, do whatever it takes to be the winner. But on the flip side, it could also cause them to be completely debilitated when they fail. In other words, like literally lose their entire sense of self-worth because they didn't succeed at something. So we have to be careful with that. We want to praise them for their achievements, but it's actually healthier to praise them for their efforts and their willingness to try something, even if they fail at it. It's that the courage to work towards a goal that matters most. Number four, living vicariously through our kids. Oh, the joy of having kids. Some people see it as a chance to live their own childhood all over again. But I'm telling you, this is not it. We cannot do this. Parents who have, I don't want to generalize, but a lot of parents that have unhealed emotional wounds tend to find it tempting to try and live through their kids as a way to heal those wounds. I recommend therapy or counseling. But yeah, we can't do that. We have to pour into our children, not expect them to pour into us. So when a parent insists that a child try to reach their own unrealized dreams. So in other words, let's say a dad really wanted to be a Major League Baseball player, and he worked really hard to do that. And, you know, all through school and high school and college, and didn't realize those dreams. That father may then have a son where he posts those dreams into his son's life, whether or not the child, let's say, even likes the sport of baseball, or a mother, you know, same process where, you know, she has some unrealized dreams and she tries to post those dreams into her daughter's life, instead of just recognizing exactly who they are and trying to support whatever natural talents and abilities or desires or dreams our kids have. So yeah, you know, kids like that have their parents do that to them are more likely to grow up without a strong sense of who they are. Again, I'm sure you're recognizing a theme here, right? So, you know, they don't have a strong sense of self because they're kind of being steered to be what their parents want them to be. And then they may also be resentful towards their parents, while also being dependent on them to help them make decisions, because their parents are kind of telling them that, you know, this sort of messaging where you're living vicariously through your kids, can kind of tell them that what they want to do is invalid. Again, back to the invalidating, but kind of tell them that what they're doing, what they want to do is crap, and what you want them to do is the best. So there's that unsurety there Again, lack of confidence, we've created a lack of self-esteem, and we all know where that path leads, folks, right? Don't we? Bleeds into everything. Number five, expecting perfection. So setting the bar high can be good for kids, right? It teaches them that they can do more than they think. Wonderful, wonderful concept. But expecting perfection actually goes far beyond setting the bar high. It sets an unattainable, unsustainable bar, if you will, way beyond. I mean, you probably have to squint at it into binoculars to see it. That's how ridiculous perfection actually is. So your kids have to aim for something that they'll never, ever, ever be able to achieve. And that thing that they are aiming for is their parents' version of perfection. So see, what I think is perfect, I know that my kids are not going to think is perfect. It's just not reality. What I think is perfect is not what you are going to think is perfect. What I think is perfect is not going to be what my spouse or my parents think is perfect. So, and the list goes on. So I am not going to put my idea of perfection on to my children. I'm going to allow them to find that for themselves and whatever kind of world or job or extracurriculars, whatever way that they want to express their life, then in their mind, they will create their own version of perfect. But it shouldn't be something that I'm expecting of them based on my concept of perfection, if you know what I mean. Secondly, expecting perfection could also cause them to feel like they can never measure up. Now that is obviously stating the obvious. But again, this is another smack at their confidence, another smack at their self-esteem, because they grow up feeling as though they aren't good enough. And like they're never going to live up to your expectations and achieve those unattainable goals. So we don't want to do that. We never want to put our own perfection onto our children. Number six, using fear to gain compliance. Whether a parent is intimidating by using threats or embarrassing a kid or hitting them, scaring children into complying definitely backfires in one way or another. They'll be more likely to make decisions based on fear instead of on what they actually believe to be right. And this could cause them to become an adult without a healthy moral compass. Plus, what you're actually doing is conditioning them to be okay with being threatened into compliance. So that's pretty fucked up if you think about it. And if you think about all the things that your kids will go through, especially when they're in school, in their peer groups, maybe they go off to college, maybe they don't, who knows. But in life, if we are the first bullies that our kids have, and then they go out into the world and they're confronted by bullies, how do you expect them to have the tools to stand up for themselves, to have, again, confidence, a sense of self-worth, a sense of self-respect? How will they have that if we use fear tactics to get them to act and think the way that we want them to? It's not going to happen. The two roads do not converge. They diverge. So don't do that. Okay? Don't intimidate your children into willful submission. It's not even willful if you're scaring them, right? It's ridiculous. So we can't be doing that, because that really has a long-lasting impact on children, and it violates, do we even need to say this, but it violates every freaking boundary that you can imagine. So no using fear to gain compliance, okay? Number 7, trying to win favor with your kids. So whether parents are co-parenting after they're divorced or still happily married, some parents work really hard to be the favorite parent. And if I'm honest, I don't think that that's necessarily, like, I don't think we should file that under toxic, because if I'm a really good parent and I am absolutely putting in my best to be a good parent, and they just happen, my kids just happen to prefer my presence over, you know, let's say their other parent is a little more intense and a little more strict and all those things. I mean, is it unreasonable to think that you want to be around someone that is less intense or less strict? I think that is common, and I think that it's reasonable. I mean, think of your own life. Do you want to be around the people that make you feel intimidated, or do you want to be around people that make you feel good, right? So I think what number 7, though, is trying to say is that if you're doing things purposely in a manipulative way to gain your child's favor, you know, almost competing for their attention, it might feel good to the parent, but ultimately the kids lose in the end, because this could cause them to grow up to be adults who manipulate others as a way to get what they want. So while they're little, maybe they don't really catch on to the manipulation tactics, but as they grow older and they have more of their own outside of the home relationships, that programming can bleed out to where they end up mistreating others just to feel good about themselves, or just to feel popular and favored because they watched you do it, right? Shopping sprees or favorite meals all the time or staying up late or whatever it is. Again, those things by themselves, if done with the right intention, are not necessarily bad, right? Sometimes I let my kids stay up late, and it's not because I want them to favor me over their father. It's just that we're going to stay up late tonight. Like, I don't know, 30 minutes later or something like that. It's harmless. There's no malice behind my decision, and there's no manipulation behind that decision. So again, it just boils down to what the parent's intention is with allowing these, you know, allowing certain things to happen. That's what we really have to be careful of. What one side, you know, winning favor, trying to win favor, is when the toxicity can kind of stir into the mix. But if you're just, you know, just changing the rules a little bit to, I don't know, just for that moment, just that point in time, you're not really competing. It's just you, your parenting style. That's okay. As long as it's not done in a competitive way where your kids can recognize, like, you know, or how about this? How about saying things afterwards? Like, oh yeah, see, I made your favorite meal. You like me the most, right? I'm your favorite parent, right? Things like that. That's screwed up, and we don't want to do that. Okay, guys? Number 8, using guilt trips as a tool. Constantly reminding your child, our children, how hard you work to pay for their stuff, keep a roof over their head, put food on the table, buy the clothes and all the games and toys and whatever, or insisting that they listen better if they really loved you, If they really loved mommy, you would listen. I'm getting mommy dearest vibes with that little impersonation. But yeah, this is not what we should be doing. Now, I realize that guilt tripping is extremely successful parenting tactic. And I actually believe there was a movie about it. I actually think it's called Guilt Trip. But it has like Barbara Streisand in it. And I can't remember the name of the son, but it's like this woman guilt trips the soul out of her son in this movie. It's actually a funny movie. But anyway, I digress. We don't want to guilt trip our kids for the things, the bare minimum things that we owe them. Yes, that we owe them. They didn't ask to be born. We owe them a roof over their head. We owe them food on the table. We owe them a bed to sleep in. That is our obligation to them. So let me remind you again of what I said previously, but we are to pour into them. They are not supposed to pour into us. So if we have these feelings like we should guilt our children, we really need to examine what that is rooted in for us as the parent, because that's not how parenting goes. And, you know, kids that are guilt tripped, are easy targets for, you know, grow up. They really do. They grow up to be easy targets for friends that, you know, let's say they want to cheat off their paper, or, you know, let's say you have a daughter and her first boyfriend guilts her into sleeping with him. Or, you know, you have a son who also has a girlfriend that guilts him into sleeping with her. Or, you know, drugs. You know, there's a million examples I could give. So it's all in that vein of guilt tripping. We don't want our kids to be comfortable with being guilted in and out of behaviors, because we have to always be thinking about their future without us. And what the world is going to be and what it's going to be like, and relationships. And if we just look at our own lives, we can see the diversity there in our experiences. So we want to arm them, not disarm them. And guilt tripping is just one of those tactics that they might turn into adults who also repeat that pattern into, you know, guilting people in and out of things as well. So either your kid is, you know, depending on their personality, they could easily be guilted in and out of things. Or you might have a child who is maybe a little bit more, let's say dominant, and they then say, oh, well, that's what my parents did to me, so I'm going to use that to get what I want out of people. So it could easily turn into, but it is a manipulation tactic. So your kids will just absorb that. If you are making them comfortable with that, then they're going to be comfortable with that long after your parenting days are behind you. Number 9, parentifying our kids. Now, parentifying is essentially turning your child into the parent by relying on them or leaning on them emotionally. And parents who are more susceptible to doing this usually lack a proper support system, you know, of friends or adult confidants, or they may be insecure with their decision making as a parent or a person, and so then they depend on their kids to step up, which is very, 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 very wrong. It's almost like if you had a 5-year-old And you expected that 5-year-old to prepare elaborate meals for the family on the stovetop every single night. We wouldn't do that. They're just not equipped to do that and to know how to prepare a meal and have it taste good and feed a family. They're just not equipped for that. In the same vein, our kids are not equipped to emotionally support us. I mean, we have decades of life experience beyond where they are in their development, and leaving them wounded like that, because they do get wounded if you emotionally dump on them about, you know, whatever's happening, whatever you're suffering with. If you dump that onto your child, where do they go? What are they supposed to do? Number one, they can't even comprehend a lot of the situations we might be in. They can't empathize because they're kids. They have, again, haven't gone through our life experiences and have no idea probably what the hell we're talking about. And so now they're sitting there with this information and they have no idea what to do with it, but they know that mommy or daddy is hurting. And so what are we doing? What are we doing to them? We're leaving them. We're just, you know, it would almost be like, you know, I'm hurting, so you're hurting. So now your kid is hurting. Now what? You might feel better because you had someone to talk to. You might think of it innocently like that. You might think, well, you know, I'm just talking to my kid. No, you're actually not, because communication is important, as we all know, and you're communicating your own fears to your child, and yet they can do nothing about it. And now they're sitting there with the same fears that you have. So all your fears have now become contagious, and your kid is going to be sick with them. And they have no way to get better, because the person who is supposed to protect them from feeling that way is not. There's actually causing it. So we do not want to do that. We don't want to saddle our kids with our own problems. We need to find a way to, you know, get the support that we need, whether that is through therapy or through group support. My DMs are always open. And just find other ways to vent and release and tap into other resources outside of our children. Because giving them more information and responsibility than they're capable of handling will exponentially raise their anxiety levels, because they're going to live on that razor edge where they won't know what's happening. They won't know what's going to come next. And imagine if you live in a home where all your parents do is emotionally dump on you and fill you up with that. Not only will your psychological development be stunted, but now you're like constantly anxious and worried about where the next problem is coming from. And you're going to grow up to be an anxious adult who needs to feel in control of everything just to feel safe. And we know how that goes. It's not good. It's not good for anyone. And you know, if you're a parent who's doing that, you might also want to think that you'll do that. Let's say you don't get the help that you need or the support that you need, so you rely on your children. Well, guess what? Your child will grow up and have to get the support that you were supposed to get. They're going to have to go to therapy. They're probably going to have to, they might even need medication. And these are things that you should have handled, you should have taken care of, or found a way to heal if that is, you know, those behaviors are rooted in maybe your own parent did that to you, parentified you. So it's all can get all very noxious very quickly. Doesn't take a whole lot. Again, you know, deals a lot. This one particular behavior can also cause a lot of fear in our children. It's just very, very, very bad. So please never, ever, ever, ever parentify your kids, no matter what. Number 10, being emotionally unavailable. This is cliche, but it is also true. Kids need your presence more than presents. So they don't need a bunch of stuff. They need you. And in today's world, I think we all can agree, especially after the last, holy smokes, how long has it been anyway? Like a year and a half. I think that we can all agree that it can get easy to be worn so thin that you literally don't have a drop left to give. And you want to check out, you want to look at, you know, stupid videos on the internet. You want to stare at your phone. You want to just like separate yourself for a moment in a little bubble, just to reset and restart or take time to, I don't know, just have things be quiet. I get it. I get it. I get it. I'm like that. I definitely need my space to, my peace and quiet to not be talking to anybody. And I love to read and I'm kind of dorky like that. Like I just like to have some space, have some peace to reset. So what I'm saying is that, yeah, it can be very easy sometimes to become emotionally available. Now, if I'm emotionally unavailable to my children on a Saturday from like 3 to 6 p.m., am I going to beat myself up over that? No, I'm actually not. I'm going to be kind to myself and say, you know what? Now's not the time. Okay. I'm going to be real about that to myself. So the problem comes in when you are consistently unavailable. You're consistently staring at your phone or consistently too busy and too stressed and on the go and da, 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 da. You don't take the time to emotionally connect or look them in the eyes or, you know, sit down and play for 15 minutes. It really doesn't take that long to dial into our kids emotionally. It just doesn't. And you can reconnect in like these little moments. You can, you know, like sometimes I'll catch myself and I'm just going. And I'm like, shit. I haven't, you know, sat down and asked my daughters what's going on. So I catch myself and then I turn it around and I say, hey, what's up with you? How's it going? What are you doing? Or one of the ways that I make sure that I always check in is like, you know, in the morning time, that's sacred. And then after school, that's sacred. And, you know, usually over dinner, unless we're running late. So I purposely put points of connection into my day with the kids. And sometimes they're resetting themselves and they're not emotionally available to me. So I might ask and they're like, everything's fine. You know, like they're just, you know, they want to go off and do their thing. But the more intentional you are about it, and the more available you are, you know, it's the better the chances that your child will be able to grow up and develop healthy, meaningful relationships. So that's the goal, you know, just letting them know that you are there for them to lean on whenever they need it. That's something I say. I'm like, call me if you need anything. Let me know if you need anything. I'm here. You want to talk about anything? Just those simple little things. You know, it doesn't take hours. It doesn't, you don't have to like carve out 3 hours in your day to be emotionally available. Or you don't need to do it 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. That's literally impossible. So just be kind to yourself. And if you notice that you check out a little more than you should, then just swing the needle in the other direction and catch it. And then, you know, call your kid or sit down with them for 5 minutes, 10 minutes, whatever it is, or, you know, have the conversations while you're driving somewhere, you know, just have a funny conversation, you know, stuff like that. Stuff like that can definitely help. And that's the end of this episode, 10 toxic behaviors, toxic parenting behaviors. And if you identified with some of these, hopefully there's been some context there where you can, you know, sort of course correct. Please, please, this is not meant to have anybody beating themselves up, okay? I just want you guys to take, you know, just take a little inventory, same way I do, and hopefully you were able to pull some nuggets from this episode and apply it to your life, and you found some wisdom here, because that's all I want for you guys, is just to help you, you know, be better, do better, feel better about your parenting, and know that this job is not for the weak, okay? And I bet you're doing a better job than you give yourself credit for. So until next time, oh, and please let us know, you know, if you got something from it, great. If you think it's crap, please let us know. Feedback is always welcome. But until next time, guys, take care of yourselves. This article was originally published on Business Insider, July 11th, 2020. This episode is brought to you by online-therapy.com. Online-therapy.com, endorsed by Dr. Elizabeth Lombardo, PhD. This site is not like any other online therapy sites. It's more than just chat. It's a full therapeutical program with actual therapists, activity sessions, worksheets, and so much more. A complete CBT toolbox and maintenance program at a fraction of the cost of traditional in-office therapy. You can literally get therapy in your pajamas at your house. So learn more and get 20% off your first month by visiting the link in the description of this episode.